what has maybe not surprised me, but what we have seen is also that while we have had the market rally that I expected, and not all of it yet. I mean, I call it a blow-off top, and I really stand by that. And we're not by the end of that, by any means yet. What I did not expect was that it's dragging out as long as it has. I mean, in terms of the market, sorry, the economy still staying strong.
Welcome back to Soar Financially, where we discuss the macro to understand the micro. Welcome to 2024. This is our second interview of the year. Happy New Year, everybody. Health and wealth to everybody. Health in particular, I think that's the most important asset you have. Doesn't matter how much money you have. If you're not healthy, who cares? So all the best to you. Make some wise decisions, get educated, and of course, follow this channel. It's good to see everybody again here this year. And we've got lots to discuss again. Lots going on. We already had a fantastic interview with Andy Schechtman yesterday, and we decided it's going to be a tumultuous 2024. And I think our guest today is going to sort of confirm that as well, because we're going to look at a few scenarios, how the market is going to play out. And we've had our guest on a number of times now, and he has a fantastic hit rate predicting the market, and really looking forward to recapping a bit of 2023, some of his market calls, but also forecast, of course, what is going to happen this year. It is, of course, Henrik Zeeberg of the Zeeberg Report. And before I switch over to my guest, a bit of a teaser, hit that subscribe button right there. We really appreciate it, and we can bring guests like Henrik on the program just as often as we do anyway. So really appreciate that, and leave a comment, leave a like. Now, Henrik, it's great to see you again. Happy New Year. Thank you so much for making the time of joining us again.
Happy New Year. Thank you for having me on again.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, you made some fantastic calls last year, and you're a bit of a contrary indicator for us as well, because you're sometimes quite positive while everybody else is bearish. I'm sometimes worried that our channel is turning into a doom and gloom report here. But there is also positive sides, of course, in the markets, and it's time to explore them a little bit with you here as well. Let's start with recapping 2023 a little bit. Interesting year, of course, but let's recap it. What were some of the most important events for you? And let's take a look at some of the calls you've made as well.
Sure. How I see it was that when we were here a year ago, people were very bearish. I think I was struggling a lot with people on FinTwit in terms of where are we going, and people were calling for a crash. And I think they were, it's an imminent recession, and the recession calls were all over the place. And I said, well, I think we're going to have a very strong market rally. And the reason I said so was because the business cycle that I follow, the business cycle that I've been developing, didn't support any kind of real contraction, or meaning that it was not into a not pointing to a recession coming in early 2023, at least. It could suggest at that point, and I think also I said I thought at this point maybe we were late 23, we could see the crash coming. Or at least that the recession could be getting closer. What has maybe not surprised me, but what we have seen is also that while we have had the market rally that I expected, and not all of it yet. I mean, I call it a blow-off top, and I really stand by that. And we're not by the end of that, by any means yet. What I did not expect was that it's dragging out as long as it has. I mean, in terms of the economy still staying strong, and when it comes to the it's simply based on the labor market in the US, because if we look at the leading indicators in the economy, those are plummeting, and they have been plummeting ever since early 2022. And that's why I said in the beginning of this year that I thought that by the end of this year, we would start to see some, by the end of 23, sorry, we should have seen some deterioration in the economy that would be more visible than what it actually has been. And that's where I've been, not timing it correctly or whatever, but I've been on the right side of the markets because I've been long, because I haven't, by far, we haven't reached the levels in the market that I'm seeing, and we haven't seen the rollover of the economy. So you can say, was I wrong on timing that when the recession should end? Well, I'm fine because I'm still on the right side of the market. I haven't, been out of that. And I think that's also what my subscribers and my followers on Twitter see. So that's all good. Yeah. So I think everything has been developing like expected, mostly. I think the dollar was one of the reason why I actually didn't see it. I didn't see the long correctional period we had in the dollar. We saw the decline in September of 22 down to January of 23, and then we saw a correctional move. I did expect a correctional move in the dollar and then another decline, which now has started in October. But I did not see the correction period last for as long as it did. And that's one of the reasons again. So, again, the timing part of it, but again, am I on the right side of the market? Yes, I am. So that's how I see the 23 has been developing.
No, fantastic. Yeah, let's dive a little deeper in the timing issue. I'm just curious, like what sort of threw off that timing? Because there, a lot of instances where we just threw money at the problem. I think we've discussed that as well. Inflation Reduction Act, CHIPS Act, things like that, to sort of prolong the suffering maybe a little bit here. Is it just being money thrown at the problem that's sort of extending the business cycle here?
I don't know. I think there is too much talk about what the. I mean, we're putting the Fed what kind of stimulus can do to the economy up on a pedestal here, and kind of think that we can change the whole dynamics of the business cycle. And I think that's very a huge misconception. I mean, we got business cycles, and they are healthy. It's like you have got forest fires that are good because you need to have the when things are getting too dense in the forest, there will be a forest fire. But in the economy, you need to have fires at some point because there are things that are popping up that needs to be destroyed again, and then new things will develop again. So it's like Schumpeter's destruction of the value of value destruction also that he calls for. So I think we have ups and downs in the economy, and thinking that we can just smoothen everything out is simply a misconception. So what they do in terms of stimulus and the rate cuts and rate hikes and all that is not really what I focus on. I focus on what the economy does, what the big we are billions of people, millions of people in the market, and doing millions, trillions of trades, and this is really what matters. And I think we should focus more on that, instead of trying to think that we can actually turn the turn everything by just doing something from a stimulus perspective. Yes, the Corona stimulus had a huge impact because it was so substantial. But actually, that only pushed the whole thing down the road a bit in terms of when we're going to see the real deflationary bust that I see. So I think in terms of the market cycle, well, I think what we have seen is that companies, corporations around the world have been staffing up, has been building their capacities after Corona, because everybody was making a lot of money, and they thought, okay, now we need to build our capacity. And then the year after, the demand really doesn't come back. So companies this year have kind of been waiting out and seeing, okay, maybe the demand will come back. And I think 24 will be the time where we actually start to see that, oh, they realize that, okay, the demand may not come back, and then they will start to readjust the capacity levels in terms of employment and what else have we. So I think that that's where the deflationary bust that I've been talking about is really going to play out. But that has taken longer, but I think it's more down to the dynamics of the business cycle and the dynamics of corporations. How long are you going to, as a business owner, as shareholders, to accept that you don't see the demand picking up if you've just been ramping up your capacity? Do you wait a year? Yeah, you don't. Maybe that was where you can say, in terms of expecting it to go faster. But I do ex absolutely expect to the same the exact the developments that I was explaining last time, that we're going to see a reduction of the surplus capacity we have in the economy to be the root cause of the deflationary bust.
Absolutely. Henrik, when you were chatting, I just realized that we haven't really clarified what geographic region we're talking about. Mostly our conversations are about the US. So let's zoom out a little bit. What you just mentioned, is that only US focused? Does that include the EU? Is that global? Is that China? Let's sort of put a bit of a geographic focus around that as well, because I think it is quite different depending on where you're at in the world.
Well, we haven't gotten to the part where we start to see it really in the economy. We may have seen some of it develop, starting to develop in China, where we see in the property market, where we have had a surplus capacity. That's been very obvious there. I think we will see it also in residential, sorry, in commercial properties, also in the Western world, coming to maybe to 2024 here. I think there's going to be a lot of problems there as well. So I think that is one place where we see surplus capacity, but I think it's also down to straight out ordinary companies around the world where capacity has been built because you actually had a fantastic 2021. After Corona, everything was just shooting up, and you could make money on whatever you did, because there was simply just this a massive stimulus. And so what I'm talking about will be global. It will have different shapes and forms depending on where you look in the beginning, but by the end of it, and when we start to feel it, well, then it'll be global. What why the reason we don't feel it right now is because we're not in a recession. We're not even, when I say we're not close, I mean that we don't see it because we haven't seen the real deterioration. We haven't started to see the initial claims. We haven't started to see unemployment go up really strongly and all these things. So we need to see that. Then we'll start to see also the housing market, the decline that we have seen, or the deterioration there starting to play in, and that's going to be even even worse in the 2024. So the deflationary bust is something that is going to be felt widespread. It's going to be felt for companies that need to reduce their capacities. The demand expansion that they expect is not going to come. It's going to be felt in the residential, in commercial properties, because you know there is a surplus in certain countries more than others, and so on. So how do we see it? Depends on you know what are the structures and the setup in the individual countries, but it's going to be widespread and felt, yeah, all across the world.
Yeah. The reason I'm asking as well, because I've just in preparation for our conversation here, I just Googled business cycles and I ended up on the Fidelity website, and they're explaining their business cycle update and how they're investing in business cycles, of course, promoting a product. But one thing they have is a global business cycle, like a chart, and they have China sort of at the end, at the bottom, actually coming out of that contractionary period, out of that recession already. So they're halfway out of
Yeah,
that
I
session in that early period of
couldn't
that business
disagree more.
cycle. So yeah, that's
I
why
couldn't
I'm throwing
disagree.
that in there. So I'm curious, but that if you agree, and that's sort of why I said, okay, let's zoom out here. Is there a difference based on where you're at on the globe? So I'm curious. Okay, you don't
Yeah,
agree, so.
no, I don't agree. I don't agree like with that. I mean, I think it's sorry to say, a bit naive, honestly, to see that if you think that the rest of the world is going to fall into recession, even though you have China as you know kind of a special species here in the world, but they are seeing the beginning of this. They only at the beginning of what we're going to see. There's going to be very strong, yeah, as I said, deflationary bust, which means that you know unemployment will go up by a lot, and their growth will you know plummet, and so on and so forth. And of course, that's going to intensify also with the coming what when we see it you know across the globe, because when demand is coming down across the globe, it's also going to be felt in China. China is not you know capable of just you know stemming that up with stimulus or anything like that. So I don't agree with that. I also see that the Germany should be on the bottom, kind of just below behind China like that, and then so on. We are right now, and the global economy is a you know very closely connected and interknitted. And we are in at a point here where the global business cycle is not falling into the contraction area yet. We are at a point where we're seeing the leading indicators telling us that this is going to be bad, and it's actually going to be, I think it's going to be worse than what we saw during the financial crisis. So it's going to be really bad in terms of you know unemployment shooting up a lot. We're going to see you know negative growth. We're going to see a deflationary bust, which means that we're going to see negative price development. And you know if you remember 1 year ago, I was actually also calling, and also in June I was calling for you know prices to come down significantly. I mean, sorry, the CPI numbers to come down significantly. And if you were here, if we talked a year ago, I you know people saying, yeah, we have permanent inflation and so on and so forth. No, because they simply do not understand that the business cycle will be pulling prices down and CPI down. And that's what we have seen now. We are at what is it called? Trueflation is now estimating the real inflation rate to be around 2% in the US. So I think we need to understand that it's not like the world is so is in a place where you see that China can just disconnect from the US. I mean, it that doesn't you know makes any sense in my world at least.
No. Recession. You mentioned we're not in a recession yet, and I think we need to talk about the definition of a recession as well. Because I'm in Germany, you're in Denmark, of course. So Germany, based on numbers and GDP growth, we are in a recession. But as you said, we're not feeling it yet. We're not seeing unemployment explode. So the question is, like, do we need to redefine the term recession a little bit? Because on a GDP basis, we are in a recession, right? Is there a
Yeah.
difference? Do we need to differentiate here? Is like, do we need to invent a new term for recession?
No, I don't think we need to invent a new term for a recession. We need to understand what a recession is. And I think that when we have done a definition earlier on, it's like, you know, when you have two consecutive quarters, then it normally would have been, you normally would have seen a deterioration in the economy where an unemployment has been shooting up and things like that. But that's not what we have seen.
Exactly.
And what you need really need, you need to see that unemployment, that is the economy is about the labor market, and it's about the housing market. These are the two main factors that really define whether we have a recession. I mean, a recession can be without the housing market really decreasing, but the labor market should be decreasing or deteriorating, and you should see unemployment coming up. What I think we're going to see in Germany is that this is going to intensify. So you're in the first innings of the recession. Not a recession in per se, but in what will develop into a recession when we also see that the US is going to develop into that. The moment we start to see the labor market deteriorating fast in the US, that's the point when I say, okay, now we will be closer to a recession. I got a recession watch indicator that I've been developing, and I got 17 signals that I follow, and I can tell that from these 17, it's very, very clear we are not in a recession at this point. But the US will probably fall in a recession in Q2 of 24 is my best estimate at this point.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, interesting. No, I appreciate you clarifying that as well. You mentioned truflation. I saw you retweeted that the other day as well, and I wanted to follow up on that. What is that exactly, and what does it mean? Like, how does that factor in? Because it looks like it's pulling a lot of interesting data from like CarGuru and other websites that actually have real price discovery and not just some made-up data. So I'm curious. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
What I've investigated, or what I've been using them for, and when I've looked into what they do, is that they, as you say, they use a lot of input in terms of understanding what is the price development at this point, not with the CPI numbers, which we know are lacking. So when we get the CPI numbers out, they are already outdated. What we get there is actually a real understanding of what does it look like at this point here. So it's more of a continuous estimate on the CPI that comes out at a later point, and they seem to be rather correct in their forecasts and in their assessments. So I think they are worth following, and I absolutely definitely follow their work. And so that's what I use it for, to have an understanding of where we are now. And what I see there is that as expected, that inflation has been coming down strongly. We're down, what was the last number? 3.1. I can't even
Three point
remember the
one, I
last
think.
CPI
Yeah.
number now, because. Yeah, 3.1, right? And I think if they are correct in the truflation, well, we're going to see another strong drop there. And I wouldn't be, I don't know what the level would be, but I don't think it'll be down to 2% that I think the truflation is down to now. But again, because CPI will be a little outdated, but it is coming down. And a year ago, everybody was still hesitant about whether inflation would not stay. I tell with the leading indicators we have on what is driving inflation. Inflation is going to plummet, and we're going to see a very, very strong negative impulse on inflation in 2024. And I expect negative inflation rate of coming up to 5, 6, 7% at some point. And I know this sounds, strong, but that's what I believe is what we're going to see.
No, okay. I was going to talk about a couple of inflation trends as well, because, or also what the effects are of a 2% inflation rate. What would that mean from an economic policy standpoint? What will the Fed do? I think that leads us a bit to that Fed rate cut or hike discussion here as well. Market predicts up to 7 rate cuts next year, which I think is quite aggressive. The Fed itself and Jerome Powell announced maybe 3. They hinted at 3. Where do you stand on that, and what kind of impact will that have?
I've never been good at understanding and forecasting the Fed's rate cut cycle, what they do. But what I again, because I follow the economy, I don't follow the Fed. I don't see the Fed as a leading indicator on the economy, as many people do. What I look at a 2-year rate yield, US yield, that is going to plummet, and it's going to plummet faster than what we saw before the financial crisis. And if you look at the first 2 months here, since the October top, we actually see some of the strongest declines in the yield level, market yield levels in US 10-year and 2 years and other yield levels than we have seen before. And this is an indication of the severity of the crisis that we're heading into, and which is also supported by the leading indicators that I follow. And what the Fed does, I mean, they will follow the 2-year yield level. That's what they normally do. So when we see a top in that, they will follow it down, not the other way around. So if you ask me what the market is, seems to be, what would happen in the market, I think we're going to see plummeting market rates. And when we talk in a year's time, so let's say, please invite me in January next year. Market yields will be down to the lows of what we saw before the spike we saw here in yields. It's going to be really a tremendous drop here over the next 12 months. So again, if you want to positioning yourself there, I mean, that's a, I think bonds will be a fantastic place to be in at this point here, because the recession, I don't see how we can get through 24 without seeing the recession. I mean, there are so many indicators that it's going to come, and but also that the, again, it's not here right now, but probably in 6 months' time, things will be a lot different.
Interesting, because
And saying recession will be the moment when yields really starts to plummet. That's always been the case. The moment you see the recession set in, that's where yields are just, you know, dropping really hard. And yes, the Fed will follow there. So will it be three? I don't think it'll be three. I think it'll be more. But depending on again when the recession sets in and market yields. But they should be already at this point here. If they should really be front running the market and the economy, they should have understood long ago that what they did with the latest rate hikes was an overextension of what they needed to do, because the market dynamics was already pushing inflation down, and it was clear. I mean, there are so many indicators of it, and I said it even on my live shows. I said I think this was not just one or two bridges too far. I think it was three or four or five bridges too far. They got scared of their own ghost that they think they have. They thought they have created in an inflation ghost, not understanding. And this is, you know, really shocking and surprising to me, that the real economy is what drives inflation. The real economy is supply and demand. And if you're going in and you're boosting the economy monetarily and fiscally, fiscal stimulus into a supply crisis, well, then you're going to get inflation. I didn't expect it to move that high. I'll be fair to say I didn't expect inflation to spike up to 9%. But what I think the Fed was thinking that they did was that they, through their money printing, actually had created this, and now they wanted to really, you know, get it down again and get the genie back in the bottle. And that's why they went out and went so hard on inflation and rate hikes. But I think it was a way overextension of what they needed to do, and this is going to haunt them in 24, late 24, and into 25, because they will be fighting deflation soon again.
Well, that's sort of what they said in their last meeting as well, in their last meeting notes, I think, as well, is like, we were too late hiking. We don't want to be too late cutting, right? So we want to be ahead of, I think that's what the market took away from it as well. We want to be ahead of the curve this time and not behind it, right? So I think that's what we're going to see.
They
I'm
already
looking, like, we had Ed Yardeni on the other day as well. I really enjoyed the conversation with him as well. But he made some points, like, and he made a forecast that had the market was like, okay, that's quite aggressive. On a positive note, on a positive side, because he called for $6,000 or 6,000 points in the S&P 500 by the end of 2025, and he gives a few reasons, like the onshoring wave, high labor demand. Household wealth is still strong corporate cash flows, and of course we discussed inflation is transitory. But to be quite honest, a lot of the other factors besides the inflation point are all leading to higher inflation, in my opinion. So I'm curious, like, how that all fits together and how that sort of translates into the market now as well. How does that translate to a 6,000 point call or
I'll agree on the six. I've had 6,100 for the last year and a half, I think, in terms of target. So I think we can go back that long, and that's what we're that's where we are heading. But I don't think no, I'm actually quite certain that by 2025 we will be far away from 6,100, and that we will not be above that. We'll be very much below that. And the reason is that, as I said, if you look at, let's just take a few indicators. If you take the leading indicators that I follow, I have a model which by the for the last 80 years, every time we have a recession signal, it has called a recession. It has not called any extra recessions, not any, it hasn't missed anyone, any recessions. So it's always been correct. The only thing is, timing-wise, when will it come? This one, we had the signal on that coming in early 23 this year, last year, sorry, 23. That means that we will have a recession setting in within a year to year and a half after that. That's one of my indicators. It's never missed for 80 years. You have the yield inversion. You have the any yield inversion you'll look at. When you have a yield inversion, you get a recession. But it always takes time. From the bottom of the yield inversion, when you have when it's inverted the most, it always takes around a year, little more than a year before you have the recession. That yield inversion bottomed out in June of 23, meaning that we expect it by June-ish 24. If you look at, I got something on the labor market also starting to show that if we, when we get to, when we have a certain, some certain crossovers, you always have recessions. We have had those, we have those crossovers. It's not deteriorated enough yet, but we had it. So everybody's saying that we're not going to see a recession here. I'm sorry to say, but they really do not understand the business cycles. And the business cycles are not just about, you know, picking this indicator and that one, and then, you know, a little of that one as well. It's about understanding that the leading indicators will lead, the coincident indicators will lead the lagging indicators. The leading indicators, we've seen those plummet. They call for the recession. Then we wait for the coincident indicators to actually show us the recession is there. And then the lagging indicators will be the rates and the likes and the yields, and they will start to come down. And that's why all this is playing out exactly as a normal business cycle. And at this point here, we have the leading indicators in deep contraction. And you know, it's been I think it's 20 months, 19 months, I think they've been deteriorating now. So actually the similar kind of setup or worse than what we saw before the financial crisis. We haven't seen the deterioration in the coincident, which has to do with the labor market, because companies are still sticking to their people, have not started to do the big layoffs yet. We haven't seen the initial claims going up. We haven't seen the unemployment rate going up, and so on and so forth. But the demand is not really there. And that's also why we see, you know, in the manufacturing numbers and all that, we do not see, you know, it's not great times this, but it's not the same as the recession because people are not being laid off. So people calling for something in 2025 needs to believe that the recession will be extended beyond 25, and I don't think that is at all possible. We're starting to see deterioration. We're starting to, and there's only so long that companies will not start to lay off people if the demand doesn't, you know, come back up. So I think mid 24 is the time for when the recession sets in, and people can just not fathom or understand the kind of move you can see in the last phase of of the business cycle, especially when liquidity starts to come in. Because one thing I do think is correct is that the Fed and other central banks and what else will start, of course, to you know, stimulate the economy when they start to see, okay, there is some weakness here. And I think that is what's going to maybe send some positive vibes into the to the market. My technical models point to 6,100. That's been my target for a year and a half, but I think we're going to reach it within the next 6 months.
No. Interesting. Okay. Fantastic analysis, Henrik. I really like listening. Just gives me a lot of food for thought. And just coming back to Ed Giardini again, because he suggests also that we maybe need to rethink some economic indicators. We talked about it, a lot of in manufacturing, for example. But he says, well, we're seeing an industrial revolution 4.0 right now with the advancement of AI. All right. How does that factor into your sort of indicators and into the business cycle? Could that prolong it? Could that change the dynamics of it totally? Really curious. I think that's an interesting topic to discuss.
I think it's so funny. Every time I hear something that we need to change the economic indicators, I stop listening, honestly.
Okay.
I got enough gray hair now to understand and to know that you know, when people say that this time is different, it's not. It's not different this time. And when I remember 20 years ago, also going into the dot-com bubble, we were saying, oh, this time is different. This is the new economy. And now things will be, you know, quite different this time around because, you know, businesses do business in a different manner. Yes, they will. But it doesn't all of a sudden, you know, change the structures of the economy. Human beings will still be human beings with the emotions, the feelings, and what else we have. And there will be the cycles in the economy that we have. The Fed will not be able to change that. Technology changes in the world, around the world or the globe over today, tomorrow, or in 100 years will not change that. So the business cycles will be there. And when we understand how they are, you know, interacting, also understanding that there is a timing and it takes time. And depending on how people, what they have just been going through in terms of, you know, economic downturn, if you've been laid off, you will probably be saving a little more when you start to get your next job. You're not spending as much and so on. So of course you will be affected by that. But just by calling out AI and say, okay, now AI is going to actually change the world. AI is going to change, absolutely going to change the world. It's going to be an industrial revolution. We're going to see, you know, growth rates coming back because of that. Just like the steam engine did in 1850s, you know, the automobile, the radio and so on did in the early 1900s. But did it change the business cycle? No, it did not. So and it will not do this time either. So what we will see is that you will have all these calls here for Euphoria and AI will now save the world. And I think I'm also going to talk to Ralph Powell on this and on January 10th, also calling for the exact same. But first of all, AI and machine learning, robotics, even blockchain technology will take time to get implemented in the economy, and it will have huge effects. What I'm talking about is something that is already set. It's in the cards. The cards have been dealt. We're here. We got what we got in the next 6 months. There's no way that AI all of a sudden jumps in and say, "Hey, we are the big savior here." Now we jump down to the corporation there, and you're the CEO. You don't sit and say, "Okay, I'm going to invest heavily and hugely and make sure that and I will not lay off my people." I mean, it's just a thing you throw on the table and say, "This theme here sounds like a fantastic new thing," and then you're going to see the whole world, developing in another way than we usually see it. Again, I have to say, and I apologize for being so frank, but it's because the understanding of business cycle is really not good, not strong enough.
No, love it. I love the discussion, Henrik. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for clarifying that and sharing your opinion, obviously, on that as well. That's what makes a market. I love it. And that's why we have you on
Yeah,
this program as
absolutely.
well. And I truly enjoy this conversation. And one last topic we need to tackle, Henrik, is commodities, obviously, because we're honestly a commodity focused channel here, but we're trying to understand the macro to understand the micro. So let's talk commodities. You're also known for your controversial gold calls, and everybody hopes that you're not right, obviously, because you see gold plummeting at a certain point in time to 1250. I think I wrote down was one of your price targets. Let's discuss that again. Like, has that outlook changed? Has your forecast changed a little bit? Timing? Let's discuss that.
Sure. So Mike, first of all, when it came, let's just wind or rewind whatever I said back, a few years ago. My gold call still stands, and what I said back then is that it was one of the places where it first became visible to me technically and in the charts that we were going to see a plummet due to the technical, due to the structures that I see, the Elliott waves and so on and so forth. And people don't like that because we have all the gold bucks there and they don't like this call. And
Exactly.
I am a gold person myself. I am a gold bull also, but in the long term. I mean, at these levels here, I just don't want to buy because, as again, a natural consequence of what I'm saying here with a deflationary bust is that there will be a liquidity crisis. And the reason why people hold gold, and they don't really consider that, the reason why you want to hold gold is when you have a liquidity crisis, gold will always be your way to get, liquidity, meaning US dollars. So gold is a good thing for that, and also long term because when you have inflation, it moves up. Gold will, follow in price. So and it's a, the same and stable kind of, product commodity. So I am a gold buck also bond, but I'm still standing with the 1250 where I maybe moderated it because of the, I have a say. I have to say, gold is standing out strong here for the last couple of years. If you look at silver, it never stood out as strong as that. If you look at the gold miners, it never stood as strong as that, which are indicators to me also. And if you look at that, normally when you have a strong gold market, gold bull market, you would see that silver and gold miners were actually leading gold. You haven't seen that for the last couple of years. So I think gold is overextending itself at this point here. And if you have a deflationary bust that I'm talking about, the recession, and you will have bank crisis, you will have, yeah, there will be a lot of, trouble around the world and liquidity-wise as well. Gold will not do well. Why would you want to go buy gold if you need to pay off your bills? You need to pay down your debt levels and your debt. So that I think there is a misconception again about why I'm calling for this. I mean, I'm not, anti-gold or anything like that. Actually, I'm the opposite. I think the next monetary system that we are probably going to see at some point will be based on gold. So I again, because I think that's a sound way of having a reserve currency or a sort of basket currency that is, fixed to something, so we just can't, keep printing money. So the call is because of the deflation that I see, of course, of the recession that is going to set in 2024 as I see it, and into 25. But the moment when we get the Fed coming back in again, and we get, when they try to push or to inflate the economy again, that's the moment I'll be one of the first buyers of gold. But again, please note also, if you look at the gold miners, which is actually my main play here, is the gold miners have been declining. Also, I think they are way down in 23. I mean, they were down a lot by since June or something like that. Right? I haven't followed closely just the last month here, but they so I'm expecting a major low to come in miners in silver and in gold when you see the recession sets in. And actually, you had that in the financial crisis as well. And right now we are seeing exactly the same kind of, development before the financial crisis. Gold fell by 33%, I think it was, from March of 2008 until September 2008. 6 months, it fell 33%. And I think silver in the same period fell by 60%. So I'm not against gold. And I think that's where I've been, misunderstood. What I'm just saying is that when you get that deflationary bust, you don't want to hold, I mean, if you want to time it, you don't want to hold, precious metals. You don't want to hold cold commodities at all. And we start to see that. You start to see, oil's been down. People were also calling for oil prices to move up. I had a call also with that saying, I think oil is going to come down from here. If you go back and actually right at the top there, and I'm saying we were going to see oil below $10 now. I mean, that's another call you can, keep me up to next year,
Writing that down right
because
now.
when the recession sits, yeah, write that down. Let's take a look at it, and people will not believe that if we get to it. But the problem is that when the economy comes to a more or less of a standstill, despite of what the Fed will do, you need the economy, the real, people, the consumers, and so on, to be the ones that are actually carrying this through. And nobody expected a negative price in oil back then. I mean, so let's just say that this, that people cannot understand it and they do not see it right now, is not the same as it that cannot happen, because we've seen, extreme situations like that.
Okay. Let's just put a timing perspective around it as well, because what you described in 08 was pretty much within 9 months. Do you see the same scenario playing out timing-wise as well? Just a very short time frame, a lot of short-term pain for long-term gain.
Actually, I don't see it exactly as the 2008, because I think last time the Fed had the choice of the free lunch, being actually just starting printing money, and I can't believe that they gave a Nobel Prize on actually just printing money. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But anyway, but they in a scenario where you actually have low inflation, you can start printing money, and you'll actually get a positive, response on that. And you had that before the French Revolution. You also had, money printing there, and you had the positive effects of that, and the more negative effects just came later. What we have had now is 15 years of a free lunch, so to speak. The Fed thought that they were the culprits of actually bringing inflation up this time around. What I think is going to happen this time around is that the Fed will be jumping in again when they see deflation, right? When they stare at deflation in the eyes, when oil is coming down, when the economy comes to a standstill, they will be jumping in again, and they will be pouring money at this, and we will have a bounce on that. We will get a bounce, because people then say, oh, now we get, people, the Fed is coming back in. I don't think that's how it's going to develop this time around. I think actually what we have seen is that inflation will be coming back, and I think it's because the business cycle will be slower in turning this time around than the financial markets. So that means that you will have a swift turn in the financial markets, in so to speak, and there will be a lot of money chasing, goods, but the demand will not be there in the economy. And that means that I think we can get into a situation of stagflation. So my call is actually for a deflationary bust, which is actually kind of in what we saw in 2008, very, very steep decline in the markets, and negative, growth rates. The Fed will jump back in and say, oh, we got it, we got it. Everybody will believe that for some months, 6 months, whatever. And then it'll start to show that we are actually starting to see inflation. So I actually think we're closer to a secular inflationary bottom than we have been before. We're not there yet. I still think inflation will down to one more final low, but that will be probably the low. And then for the next 20, 30 years, like if we were sitting here in 1982 when we saw the top in inflation, or 1981, we wouldn't have expected 42 years later we would have been at the other extreme. I think we're actually at that extreme, or getting to it, and that will change. So and so in terms of the change there from when the Fed then jumps in, and if they create what I think will be a stagflationary period, we're going to see inflation moving up, and we're going to see that the labor market will still be struggling, or actually having, maybe a negative development of the labor market. And in that environment, you absolutely want to be long gold, That's the environment for gold and for commodities. So I think a new commodity bull will be born sometime late 24, and that will be a fantastic play for the coming years. But we're not there yet. And for the ones sitting it out through the deflationary bust, well, they need to have deep pockets.
Last question, Henrik, is how high do you rank the chance of a depression, actually, like a recession really turning really bad?
How to 95%. I mean, everywhere I look, I mean, I leave out 5% that it'll not be a deep recession, but it'll be a shallow recession. But everywhere I look, it's I mean, the housing affordability index is that way down. You look at the whole small companies been popping up all over with financed money and so on and so forth. I mean, a lot of this will come home to roost, and I think there'll be a settling here, because this about the free money will start to be I mean, we haven't had a real recession, a long lasting recession since 2008, and there are so many things that have now been popping up, like also crypto market. I mean, I think we've probably going we had a, I think it was 3 trillion kind of crypto market value in by tw late 21. I think we're going to see 4.5 in terms of market value for crypto, but I think that is going to collapse. So I think we're going to see, a almost annihilation of that market. That's a lot of money coming out. The housing market will be, devastated. We will see, a lot, as I said, a lot of new startups will have problems. That's what I see, and it's because it's been based on easy money, on cheap money, and that's the only way, the only reason why you want to go in and get something, invest in something that yields 0% is because you say, well, money is cheap, money is, for free. But that's not the real world. And when you get a recession, you actually need that money to pay off your debt, and you need to, especially if your business is not doing well, and if you are. And at a later stage, if you get a stagflation, you probably also will see that people will need to get into to gold and things that will be, the more proper way to invest in such an environment.
But not a depression, meaning it really is, like, I think a depression is defined as a recession that is where the economy is contracting by more than 10%.
Yeah, but so you're asking me if we're going to have a depression.
Recession, I think we're all in the same boat. I think we're all agreeing, okay, we're going to have a recession.
Strong recession. Yeah, strong recession is absolutely there. I cannot see how we would, if we get by end of 24, we haven't seen recession beginning, I'll be surprised. And by end 25, we should have seen also the depth of it. And I think it's going to be really bad. That's also what the leading indicators tells us. I mean, they are dropping just like what we saw during the financial crisis. But that was not a depression as such, but because the Fed had this tool in terms of, printing money, and then we get the free lunch, right?
No. Okay. Very last question. I think it's also a good summary question as well. Is when is it time to reduce exposure in the market? I think that's a really good summary question as well, because it sort of includes everything we sort of discussed just now.
Again, there are indicators that I follow which will tell me when I need to reduce my exposure. As I said, I have the recession indicators that tells me that we're getting close. We're not there yet, so I don't think it's time now. I think the technical setup right now for the market, I cannot tell, people that are calling for a crash at this point, I mean, they need to look into momentum, because the momentum in the market is simply astonishingly strong at this point. So I don't think we see any sort of crash at this point here. But I think Q1, late Q1, Q2, early Q2 would be a good time to probably do that. But again, I need to see the levels, and I need to see my indicator starting to show that we are actually see that deterioration. But I'm being very, very, observant on those and on the levels. And we actually we have we also seen the top in rates now. So we have the leading indicators crashing. We have the top in rates. We just need now to see the slow deterioration in the labor market and in the stock market. And when we have that, it's out. And the deterioration in the stock market can actually be watched, or be observed if you do some of the technical analysis that I do.
Fantastic. Henrik, tremendously appreciate your time as always. I really enjoy our conversations. As a pragmatic, it's very close to my heart. I always enjoy it. So it really fits my line of thinking a little bit as well, because one maybe personal anecdote, I had a conversation in New Orleans at a conference with a bullion dealer, and he mentioned to me, well, I see a lot more people selling gold just to cover daily expenses. So take it as it may. Of course, you can always find your statistic that fits your narrative, but I thought that was an interesting tidbit, sort of fitting in what you mentioned as well. Maybe gold is not the best thing to own, or you will see that liquidity crisis in gold, is my point. I think gold is great to own if you don't need to, if you don't need it, just leave it in your drawer and don't worry about it. Just yes. Keep it.
Yeah.
But if you're trading it, if you're investing in it, be cautious. So I get that. Absolutely. Yeah. Henrik, where can we find more of you? Where can we find your recession indicator and recession index?
So the recession indicator is something that I'm keeping close to myself at this point. I need to understand, you know, how I really want to use that. But it's something that I will, you know, at least the outcomes of it is something that I share with the subscribers on the Seaberg Report. And so that's where you can find more about me at this point.
Fantastic. Awesome. Henrik, thanks so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. All the best in 2024. And let's make sure to catch up very soon here again as well, see how this is playing out. Because you're saying, well, at the end of Q1, that's only about 3 months from now. Yeah, it is 3 months from now. Everybody can do the math. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
We should catch up then. Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, everybody else. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this discussion. I always love having different viewpoints on the channel, because it can't always be rosy or it can't always be gloomy. So we need to have both sides. Our goal is to educate you, trying to understand the macro to understand the micro. Make up your own mind. Take the information that we provide you with and come up with your own solution or your own ideas and gut feeling, of course. That's why we're doing this. And if you really enjoy our conversations and different viewpoints, subscribe to the channel. We tremendously appreciate it. Leave a comment, leave a like, so that others can also follow our conversations here as well. We'll be back with lots more content this week. Highly appreciate your time. All the best in 2024. Health and wealth. Take care.